Houston Dynamo, Portland Timbers, Sporting Kansas, Los Angeles Galaxy,
Pitch Pass,
Toronto FC, Real Salt Lake,
this is my red, white, and blue.
Chicago Fire,
this is my anthem to you.
Columbus Crew, FC Dallas, New York Red Bulls.
Pitch Pass, your all-access credential to the people that matter in MLS. Here's your host, Greg Roach.
MLS Cup Week, thank you so much for making Pitch Pass a part of your MLS Cup Week coverage. We appreciate it, and we invite you to check out some past episodes, pitchpass.com. Our last episode posted featured Ethan Finley of Columbus Crew, who just so happens to be in MLS Cup, along with Portland Timbers. We will talk about the entire match, get you fully set up for that match with our good friend from Comcast Sportsnet Mid-Atlantic, Sebastian Salazar, a little later. But we've covered the Crew side. Let's cover the Timber side with the man who pulls the strings in midfield, Diego Valeri. It's so great to have him back on the show. Diego, welcome, my friend.
How are you? Good.
We talked just about a year ago, October of 2014, and I have to say, seeing your interviews after the match versus Dallas when you guys clinched to go to MLS Cup, I got to say, your English, which was very good before, is now like fantastic.
Okay, thank you. Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Now, when we talked, I had asked you how much you guys, you and your wife, were taking lessons. You said two or three times a week, 2 hours a day. Are we still doing that, or now you're just kind of using it and getting better just by being in an English-speaking area?
No, just, I improved, talking with the guys in the locker room and in the streets. We stopped with the lessons.
Is it hard, though, when you might want to speak English and maybe some of your Spanish-speaking teammates want to speak Spanish? Do you ever have to say to them, hey, you know what? We're speaking English here. I need to work on my English. Can you speak some English?
Yeah, it is. It is. It is hard. But we, now, so the Argentinian players, they speak very well. They speak English very well.
You mentioned the Argentinian players. What about the Colombian players? How's their English?
Dairon is not the best. But Diego, it's fifth year here.
Yeah.
So yeah, he's great.
Do you guys have like an English rivalry between the South American countries? Because I noticed that you were very quick to say the Argentinians are speaking good English, and then you hand in hauled them the Colombians.
Yeah. So yeah, but we have some help here, so we are good.
I wanted to talk to you about Lucas Milano. He had a fantastic goal that kind of put the cherry on top of the sundae, clinched everything for you guys to get to MLS Cup. Well, first off, is that a move that a Diego Valeri could pull, scoring that kind of goal?
Sorry.
Is that a kind of move that a Diego Valeri could score a goal with?
No, it's a Lucas Milano movement. he's very fast, and smart. He had some problems to score, in some part of the season, but he scored the most important goal for us. So, I think he did great. That movement, he waited for the keeper. So it was amazing, and very important. So that's good.
Now, watching the game on TV, it looked like he waited a little too long. You were right next to the play. Did you think that he had kind of gone a little too far past the keeper before he made that attempt to put it in?
Yes, but I know that he's fast, so he can figure out that movement. Yeah, he's very fast, so I didn't. I don't know how he put the ball in that needle. Because it's like very very thin space. But he did great. He did great, and he was fresh because he went in the 90 minutes.
Now you're not an old player by any stretch of the imagination. You're 29 years old, but Lucas. Probably it is definitely in the next generation of players from your age group. Did he reach out to you at all to discuss what life would like in Portland as a fellow Argentine? Or did he not know you well enough to kind of do that and you kind of met when you got to Portland or when he got to Portland?
No, yeah, like you say, he's a very different generation. I'm not old, but he's a very different generation. He's very, he's young, he's more than the age of Maxi Rudy. So he has, with Maxi, a very good friend, a friend who can sure a lot of things. So
yeah,
I talked with him when he arrived here, and I tried to help him. But he's a smart guy. He's a very, very nice person. So he did well. You know, he did well. He adapted very well, and he's showing now. You know, the next year he will be more comfy here in Poland.
Were you able to kind of help him get settled in? You and your wife kind of maybe bringing him over to the house, letting him have a taste of Argentina, even though he was away from home.
Yeah, of course. And we are four Argentinians here, so we did it everything together. You know, we helped him to find a house. You know, we always, eat dinner together, the four Argentinian people, so he's feeling like at home, you know.
We were just talking about Diego Chara. The kind of key, what most insiders or most people who follow MLS will say is when Caleb decided to go with you and Darlington a little bit further forward, and then having Chara doing all of that defensive work, and he's been able to handle it with aplomb. From your point of view, what has his play allowed you to do and Darlington to do that has made you guys so successful on this run?
You know, like you say, you know, our job, we know, with Diego, because he's a very work guy, you know, so and he's great physically. So our job is, you know, help him just covering spaces and with the ball. You know, we have to help him, and we have to read each other with Darlington and Diego, but mostly with the ball. We have to be strong with the ball, you know, and dominate with it, because, you know, we are with Darlington more attacking players, attacking midfielders, so we like to attack, to be close to the target. So yeah, that's our job, you know, with Diego. We have to help him with the ball. You know, he knows that. He works a lot for us, and I think the team responds very well.
It isn't all fun and games, at least for you and Darlington. When Caleb made the move to the 4-3-3, I would assume that your defensive responsibilities, Chara had to do a lot more, but that did give you guys additional defensive responsibilities, knowing that if Diego was beaten, it's just a free rein to the back line. What extra defensive duties did you have to take on to move to this formation?
You know, mostly stay with the D mid, you know, when they have the ball, and try to win that duel, because that's important. You know, try to help, like you said, the back line and Diego, just staying and trying to win the duel against the D mid. You know, because in MLS, every midfielder can be dangerous. So I have to help him and Darlington the same. Staying and marking the D-mid who is close to us, you know.
And to me, that's going to be one of the fascinating things about MLS Cup, which is coming to ESPN on Sunday. It'll be you guys versus Columbus Crew. You guys have the two attacking midfielders in yourself and Darlington going up against two really good D-mids in Will Trapp and Tony Chani. Whereas on the other side, Chara is going to have his hands full with a guy that you know very well, Federico Higuain. That, to me, is going to be one of the big matchups, is what midfield is going to be able to assert their will on the other midfield. Have you guys talked about maybe ways where you guys will be able to exert your will over Columbus's?
You know, I think that the key is to be dynamic, you know, aggressive, and show that you want to win, you want to dominate, you know, want to win that duel, because like you say, you know, we'll be a very competitive midfielder, you know, from the both sides. So we will try to, you know, to put numbers forward, to play quick, you know, and to make them defend, because they are a very good team with the ball too. So we will try to do that, you know, we'll try to make them defend, to play as high as we can and force them to be defending most part of the time.
What are your thoughts on the MLS Cup playoffs as a whole? And I ask you that as somebody who has come from a different country. Where do they have a playoff system in Argentina? Correct?
No. We have a long tournament. We don't have playoff.
So it's a fall. Do they do the fall and the spring tournament, that sort of thing?
Yes. And now the last year was a long season,
So they've moved to one long season.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and you know, like similar than Europe, like that.
Yeah. So then it's a perfect question to ask you. What are your thoughts on the playoff system and how things are champions are crowned in this country?
I think it's great, you know, make it attractive because it's a very different tournament. You know, you play a long season during the regular season and then, you know, in a couple of months you can win everything. Mm-hmm. So it's very attractive for fans, you know, to watch games. And it's a possibility for some teams who didn't do well during the regular season to win a trophy, you know. And I think it's great. It's great. It's a great system. I like it. You know, it's a good moment because you know at the end of the season you can play like another tournament, you know, with elimination and it's very fun. You know we got the first trophy winning the West Conference, and now we are looking for this, and it's very attractive, you know, it's fun.
Were you guys excited to get that trophy? Because, look, it's a Western Conference trophy. A trophy is a trophy. But I know you guys, your competitors, are looking forward to the next weekend, the big trophy. So how was the celebration in FC Dallas? Was it full-on celebration, or was it, this is fun, we're having a good time, but let's keep our eye on the next prize?
No, we celebrate. We celebrate because, you know, for this team, for this club, it was very important, you know. It was the first one. It was the first one, and West Conference is very competitive.
Yes.
Very competitive, and it was a long season. Like I said, you have a lot of great teams, you know, and we beat one of the best teams in the league. So we celebrate, you know, because, like I say, it's the first one for this club. It's a young club, and we wanted to give, you know, this trophy to the club, and then obviously on Tuesday we started to think in MLS Cup because it's the big one, you know.
Was it uncomfortable celebrating on the opposing team's pitch in front of the opposing team's fans, whoever decided to stick around for this presentation?
No. Because this is soccer, you know, and, you know, one is a winner and then, you know, one has to lose, you know. But in soccer, you have that. And some moments, you know, I remember 2013 when Salt Lake won the West Conference at home and they celebrate, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So it's part of the business.
So... as we start to wrap up, I know from our conversation last year that you and Federico Higuain are close friends. We talked about cooking for each other when you're in Columbus or he's in Portland. Have you guys exchanged any text messages thus far this week?
No, not yet. But I will do it today, and he will do it. I think during this week, and I think we are very focused, you know, and we are a little bit busy than normal. But, yes, we will. You know, the last time we went to Columbus and we went to Pipa's home and we ate dinner and it was a great time. So we'll see, you know, now how much time we have. But obviously we will share some text messages and we'll see what happened on Sunday.
Now, this will give me and people who listen to the podcast a lot of insights on your personality. You said you'll reach out to him at some point today. Will it be a, hey, looking forward to seeing you on Sunday, or will it be more of a trash talk situation that you're texting?
No, I think it will be, you know, like some shops there and in the Texas and, you know, nothing to say now, you know. We have a relation. I think we have a good relation with Pipa outside the field. So we will, you know, just say hi and congrats, and we will beat you.
Now, you when we talked last year, you had said that you were not a beer guy. I've given you another year and change in one of the great beer cities in the world. Have you kind of changed your mind on beer, or are you still Diego Valeri wine guy?
No. I did this change because my wife wanted, you know. My wife wants this, so I'm keep the beer because she wants it, you know.
So you drink beer now.
So she's the boss.
So you drink beer now.
Yeah.
All right. What have been some of your favorites if you remember them?
I'm sorry?
What have been some of your favorite beers? Your favorite beer.
My favorite beer?
Yes.
Ah, but you say beer. Ah, okay, no. Beer. I'm sorry. No. I didn't drink beer.
Oh, you're still not a cerveza guy?
Yeah, of course. I'm still not a cerveza guy. Yeah. I'm sorry. I thought about the beer, you know? But
yes. I was very excited. I thought you came around to the joys of beer, but you still no cerveza for Diego.
No, still no beer guy, you know? And I respect, you know, I know that this is a beer city, and I can see it in the locker room. but no, I'm still, you know, I prefer water.
So you prefer water. I know you drink wine. Yeah. If everything goes well on Sunday, will you have some champagne at least?
Why not?
All right.
A good red wine from Argentina.
Well, last thing before I let you go, Diego, I noticed you got a little more facial hair than you were sporting up until this point in your time in MLS. Are you going for the Nat Borchers look, or is this just a nice trim playoff beard?
No. This is the maximum that I can support, you know? My wife will decide this, but I don't wanna have that bird, you know. I say to him, how you play with that, you know? I don't understand, but he can do it and he plays really well.
It's not his game is not a speed game. It's not for pace, Diego. He doesn't need to worry about the drag on his beard.
Yeah, that's true.
Diego Valeri, best of luck on Sunday in MLS Cup, and thank you so much for the time.
Okay, thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Diego Valeri, and it's fascinating. And you know what? We'll bring in our second guest now because you probably have a more of a insight on how, I don't want to say incredible, but how much work the guy has done. Where I've read before is when he got to the league 18 months ago, 2 years ago, spoke not a word of English. Now he's conducting goofy interviews with podcasters and really picking up probably 99% of it. Sebastian Salazar, Comcast Sportsnet Mid-Atlantic, is going to join us for our second segment. How much work does that take to immerse yourself that much in a culture and become fluent and do interviews in a language you didn't even speak 2 years ago?
Yeah, I think the most impressive thing about Diego Valeri is the age, right? I mean, if you speak to people, younger age is picking up languages all the time, but what he did, and I think the reason he did, I remember when we were doing some interviews with Portland players, maybe right before the playoffs last year, doing some of those NBC Sports games, it was impressive to me. All of his teammates appreciated it very much.
Yeah.
He immediately, and that's not something that happens all the time in MLS. You get a lot of guys from maybe Spain or Latin America, especially Spain recently, who started trickling over. Either they can gravitate towards other Spanish-speaking guys in the locker room, they can kind of do their own thing. What Valeri knew is that in order for him to be a leader in the locker room, he had to have a language. You can't lead a clique of guys. You have to lead the whole team. He threw himself at it. He did it. His teammates, his coaching staff appreciated it. They saw the effort. And you could tell even last year, there was something about how he had fit that team that was really very organic. And you know, for that, I think props to the, you know, picking players internationally, we know it's a real crapshoot. And the Timbers nailed it. They just literally nailed it with the skill set for their system and then with the guy and all the intangible leadership qualities.
You brought it up, and you've been in many more locker rooms than I have, so you can definitely speak on it a little better. You, especially speaking Spanish, you can get away with never learning English if you're here for 5 to 7 years. Is that an accurate statement?
Absolutely. I mean, absolutely. I think there's a... Just in general, and especially now with what's happening around MLS, it's not just Spanish. I mean, there's people from all corners of the globe that are now kind of filling into these locker rooms. And it's an international game, and you're in an international market in terms of soccer. So I think there's the language that you need to understand to get by. Coaches learn how to communicate with players. and especially it really, the locker room is the only place that I think can persuade a guy that he has to learn English if he doesn't. It's the locker room. And some locker rooms are very divided. You literally have cliques based on where people are from. And other locker rooms are not that way at all. And just because you have one doesn't mean it's more functional than the other. I've seen, you know, cliquey locker rooms work.
Yeah.
And I've seen, like, really buddy-buddy locker rooms fall apart. So, but I definitely, you know, I get that sense that I have seen locker rooms where the cliques have hurt a team. And I would say, based on the limited time that I spent around them, you know, a long time ago, that's not a thing with the Timbers. Is I think if you do, the odds of success are greater if you don't have those cliques. But it's really hard to ask a 30-year-old to learn a new language. Like, I hope people appreciate that. And they appreciate that some guys just can't do it. You know, they can try and they don't. And so it also speaks to the, you know, the ability to deal with language that a guy like Valeri has. That's not for everyone.
Yeah, and I'm so glad you said what you said to kind of wrap that up. And that's why I've kind of harped on it, is to really appreciate what he's done is really, really important. And if you most of us will never be in a situation where we're just dropped into a middle of a city that we don't know anything about and have to learn a language. So just props to Diego Valeri as we move into the conversation about MLS Cup. I first want to just ask you one question as the soccer Don Garber just wrapped up his State of the League address. The only thing I really want to ask you about, because I don't want to hit you with a lot of stuff since we neither of us have time to really research what he's talked about, was the fact that he did say that they're going to be evaluating the away goals as it pertains to MLS Cup playoffs. What are your thoughts on that? Because, you know, look, I'm a neophyte. I make mistakes all the time because I don't really fully understand the intricacies of the game. I just enjoy watching the game. But having said that, as someone who really always needs that thing in the corner telling me how many goals somebody needs once an away goal is scored, I really feel like the away goals rule opens up the game a little more.
I think that what the away, so here's, I'll preface this with, I hate, like everybody else, I hate that a penalty kick shootout decides the game.
Yes.
But I love the drama of it. And I think what the away goals rule does is it can tilt a game on an edge that's very uncomfortable. And that is makes for great drama. You can go from winning to losing without tying. And I like that. I really like that. I think that it playoff soccer is already intense. And when you add that element of like kind of life or death at you know, at you're either celebrating or out on one goal, I think it makes for something really special. And those are the moments that you remember forever. Like, remember when we were down? I think that if you're trying to create those types of memories for fans, to me, the away goal accomplishes that in a way that may not be fair. You know,
yeah.
To some people may not make sense, but it doesn't make it dramatic.
So where do you stand with the away goal? Would you be in favor of getting rid of it, or do you want to keep it around a little longer?
I would keep it. I enjoy the element that it brings, but I can also appreciate that as a player, you know, as the athlete that's playing, it feels kind of arbitrary, you know, and as a fan, I can see that as well. So it's a debate, but
yeah.
I love this, the playoff game that swings violently back and forth.
Yes.
To me, that's what those are the games that I'm going to be prone to talk about the next day in the office, you know?
And if we're going to talk about this year's playoffs being one of the more memorable, one of the more exciting playoffs, and it has been, one of the reasons why it has been, I think, is because of the away goals rule. And, you know, we talk about the arbitrary nature of it. It's no less arbitrary or more arbitrary than penalty kicks. And I would argue, you know, going in, if we're at home, we need to keep a clean sheet. There's nothing arbitrary about that. Lock down your defense, don't give up any goals, and you don't have anything to worry about moving to the next leg of the series.
No, and I think it's the if I were to address one thing, to me it would be more how we're choosing what games are played where. That to me is a more kind of, to me that's a bigger issue than the away goal, but The away goal is just so, it's so low hanging fruit, you know, like for whatever reason, people just want to have a go at it. And trust me, if you have a team eliminated on the away goal, damn if you don't hate it for like a good 18 months.
True.
You know? And that's fair.
True. And I don't know if you're talking to a guy who's just rolling into a room full of his buddies and they just happen to be watching MLS and maybe he's getting into the action. I don't know which way is easier to explain to him why the game is ending the way it ends, PKs or away goal rules. And maybe we shouldn't be going for those type of people, but I feel like whatever gives me more excitement is what's going to rope that person in. And then we can explain to him the away goals rule or PKs when we get to that bridge.
Yeah, the playoff, I think we've talked about this a million times. There's so many things about the structure of MLS that we kind of complain about. And I always want to remind people how, like, early on in this process we are. We're so far from a buttoned up, you know, NFL in year 60 product.
Yeah.
So, we're
going
to have to figure this out over broader sample sizes. That's my other thing. It's what I find to be difficult is to walk into a room and explain to someone who knows, because the person who doesn't know anything about MLS, like they're further off. But somebody who knew a little bit about it 2 years ago and now they come back in the playoffs and the rules have changed. That to me isn't, you know, and that to me is what we need to get away from.
So let me ask you about MLS Cup, and I know in talking with you, you are very excited about this matchup. I am as well, but I want to get your thoughts as to why this matchup could possibly make for an exciting match on Sunday.
Aggressive coaches, that's why.
Wow, okay.
Aggressive coaches with aggressive front office who have put on an aggressive product, and I think it's going to be awesome. If styles make fight, this one is teed up perfectly, just based on kind of the attitude of the coaches, how that manifests itself in their tactics and in the talent that they've picked. I think you look at both of these teams and you can across the board say these guys have evaluated talent, both domestic and international at a very high level. And I think all of those things coming together are putting a lot of good players who have kind of the leashes taken off on a field, you know, for a one-and-done game. I think it's perfect. I'm very excited about it. It's kind of like Sporting Kansas City, Real Salt Lake a few years ago. Except I think the styles and the attitudes are a little bit more similar. That was a matchup where one team did one thing, another did another, and how different they were made it interesting. This, to me, because of how similar they are, makes it really interesting.
Yeah, and there for me, this is where I love having you here to kind of break things down for me and let me know where I'm on the right track and maybe if I'm looking at the wrong thing and I should look at another thing. There are three areas that I'm looking at. Center of midfield, the wide players, and center of defense slash how the center backs deal with the target forwards of the other teams. So I want to take those three areas and kind of bounce them off of you. First one, the one we talked about with Diego, the matchup of Diego and Darlington versus Chani and Trapp, and then going the other way, Chara on Higuain. How important are those three players on each side going against each other going to be?
I mean, that's it. You just hit the center, like the heart of this matchup. Even as you look at it on a diagram of, you know, kind of where the action is going to be. To me, let's start with the fact that there are two Argentine number 10s running the show in an MLS Cup final at a time when, like, 2 or 3 years ago, do you remember the narrative that, like, oh, the number 10 is fading away and it's, like, not really a thing we're doing in MLS anymore? Well, can you find the right guy? And you're going to do it, and you're going to do it well. So to me, that's why I jump off. Higuain is the ghost. Like, you can't – to say Chara's going to be on him, I've never seen a team adequately stop Federico Higuain from getting to the spots on the field that he wants to be. Like, you can literally put a guy on him for 90 minutes, and you look up, and he's got space. And not just space, but acres of it. He's so good at finding those pockets. So I think he's going to borrow a phrase that we used earlier, to tilt this thing on an edge. But Char is great. And then the other question to me, because I think you know what you're going to get from Valeri, is which Darlington Nagby shows up.
Yes.
And I think you can say that every time the Timbers play, right? It's the most obvious statement in MLS and maybe American soccer. He can be lights out great. He can be kind of quiet. I think I'm expecting a bigger game just because I think this one will be back and forth. And I'll tell you this, man. I think if Columbus goes behind, they're in trouble. Because Caleb Porter's system, the way Porter plays, they can really absorb pressure and they steal you on the break. And it's how Portland got Columbus when they played earlier this season, where the game winner came from. And I think as you watch, if Portland gets that first goal, it is going to be very difficult for the Crew. Very difficult. Because like we saw with Dallas, once Portland defends, Diego Valeri will spring a guy like three times. It's just if they're going to finish or not.
Wait, so when you talk about Portland and their ability to defend, I look at it as two offensive midfielders and a lot of ground to cover for Diego Chara. I asked Valeri about the defensive responsibilities that are inherent in the fact that it's really just Chara behind him and then that's it. And he mentioned that they need to track their runners. They need to do their defensive work as well. What do they do? So let's just say they score first, like you are speculating. So Portland goes up. How is the way that they play different, and how do they absorb pressure with two offensive-minded midfielders in a three-man midfield?
You know, maybe the answer to that is a little bit the answer of why we see inconsistent, or what we think of as inconsistent effort or output from Darlington Nagby. You know, maybe he is doing. And you see it when you watch it, but it doesn't stand out to you. He is doing more of the work that maybe in the past he hadn't been held responsible for.
Okay.
I also think Columbus in their DNA wants their outside backs forward. I think there's a way that happens in Portland's system, but it doesn't necessarily have to happen. And that difference for me is how they're able to absorb the pressure. Also, they have a center back who is on top of being able to make a game-saving play, as he did against Dallas. Nat Borchers can see the game at a level that very few center backs in this league can. So he sets up and sniffs out and prevents suboptimal situations, to borrow a phrase again, that can happen. So I think it's just the way that they have a defensive responsibility or accountability to them that, to me, for a team that again can attack with such enthusiasm, it's a balance that few coaches can strike. Porter has clearly found it there, and especially over the last month and a half.
You know, you mentioned the fact that these two teams are just perfectly set up to play against each other, and that goes into my number two point, which is the width. It would seem on the surface that Portland likes to play a little more narrow, especially in midfield than Columbus does. So what does Columbus do to kind of maybe stretch the field width-wise rather than length-wise to maybe get Portland out of their shape?
Yeah, the best width that Columbus has is their outside backs. Offal and Francis can, in ability, not only are they allowed to run free, not only are they good at timing their run, but, you know, as you look at MLS across the board and you want to compare to other leagues, a great area of comparison is quality of crossing, quality of finishing. Like, that's how you measure a league to me. And those two outside backs deliver the best service that this league has consistently from that outside back pairing position. So you have a weapon there, and then you have the pieces in the middle to finish it. You've got a Finley, you've got a Miram. Although Miram is in essence, drifts so far out wide.
Yes.
You could consider him kind of the front edge of that, you know, left-sided, the left-sided attack. But there's so many guys in the middle that can finish. Chani can be a threat. You know, Trapp can bang from distance. You know, he's not necessarily maybe that guy that's allowed to creep up that high in the field. But those two guys and the numerical, like, games that they play, Columbus will get you in a lot of very uncomfortable slot-ons. I saw that when they came here to play DC United and RFK. They will get their guys high very quickly. And I would always hear DC United talk about, well, we have to get our midfielders high because that'll make, you know, the outside backs for Columbus stay home. The thing is, that's not how Columbus does it. Like, they just follow those guys. They don't really care what you do, which exposes them, right? That leaves them exposed at the back in some times, in some ways, if you can hit them in the right way, which I think Portland will know how to do. Those guys really make the difference for me. That's why they have the advantage. Why? Because those outside backs are so good, and they let them be good. They let them go.
But the thing is, and again, we go back to why these teams are so matched up so well. Not a lot of teams in MLS play that straight three across the top. Both of these teams, in essence, do. So could it come down to, okay, is Miram and Finley going to be able to pin back Villafana and Powell? Or is Asprilla and Wallace going to be able to keep Awful and Francis pinned back? And who's going to prevent the other team's outside backs from bombing forward?
Here's the thing. I don't think you can prevent Columbus from sending their backs forward. So if you're Portland, there's kind of other areas that you need to win. You need to win possession in midfield. You need to keep Columbus from kind of breathing out, especially once they get that crowd behind them. I think there's a natural kind of home field advantage. Portland, I think, is content in this game to sit back and not necessarily, you know, need for there to – I don't put a defensive responsibility on Wallace and Asprilla in terms of pinning down, you know, what Columbus does. You know, this is really – it's going to come down to finishing, and that's an obvious statement. But for me, it's on Kai Kamara. He got in – when they played earlier this year, he got four or five chances and finished one. And I mean four or five, like, quality Kai Kamara usually in the back of the net chance. If he can finish those opportunities, the Columbus Crew will win. Outside of that, I really think that Portland's just more set up to do damage in this situation with the way their guys are playing than Columbus.
It's very interesting, and we're leading up to your, I don't want to say scoreline prediction, but who you think's going to win. And we're already getting a sense that you're going maybe a way that other pundits, other fans aren't going. But before we get to that, let's talk about the third point, which is the center backs of each team versus the opposing team's center forward. And the great thing, the fun thing about this matchup is you've got two traditional target forwards, big guys who like to mix it up and aren't afraid to do it, but also have quickness. So it's not just one of those things where you can just get bogged down with headers or playing long ball. These guys can play the game with their feet. So what team has the advantage with their center forward against the other team's center backs?
If you have to get – so I would give you – I'll say this. Kamara has the advantage over Adi. And I think part of that is because I'd rate him higher. Part of that is because I don't know that there's a physical – I think to stop Kai Kamara, you have to kind of bang him. You really have to kind of hit him and be physical with him. And I don't think there's a matchup along Portland's back line where they can do that. So I'm not really sure how they stop Kai Kamara from getting their chances. I think you can limit – Fernando Adi by limiting where he gets the ball. And I think if you keep him outside the box, if you prevent him from if you cut off the service to his feet, you can in some ways take him out of the game. To me, Kamara, that's impossible to do. And I go back to the game when Columbus played here the first time this season in D.C. And Kobe Opari was in the game, and people were worried about it because he's their third-choice center back at the time for D.C. And he literally took – it's one of the only times I've ever seen Kai Kamara taken out of the game.
Perfect matchup for
Opari. Physically locked. Perfect matchup. I don't see that on Portland's back line. Fortress is great and heady, but physically he's not going to be able to take the game to Kamara like that. If he's got a performance in him, if they ask him to do that, which I don't think that they would, then Portland can eliminate him. Otherwise, you're just going to have one of those games where Coley makes a couple big saves, he misses a couple clear chances, and while that's happening, Portland has maybe has hit Columbus on the break, because I don't know that there's anything Portland can do to eliminate service to Kai Kamara and to eliminate his physical presence in the game. You can't – the Crew, it's very hard to stop the Crew doing what they do, especially over the last 2 months. They have this identity, they plug it in, and I don't know that anybody has figured out how to not let them do it. But, that's the beauty of a one-game scenario.
It's interesting because I thought you were setting me up for this statement, which then I started thinking about. I was like, oh, that makes sense, that – If we're just taking one player over the other, we're taking Kamara over Adi. However, Kamara's matchup against the Portland center backs is more difficult for what he does well than Adi's matchup against the Columbus center backs for what he does well. But then you started to go another way, and I guess the difference between physical, when I think physical, I think, well, Borchers can body him up, but I guess you're saying you also have to deal with Kamara's quickness and ability to get open.
Yeah, and his runs off the ball are sensational. The way that he makes himself available. You'll see so many great passes come out of the Crew midfield, and credit to those guys. Credit to Afidmi Amir, Maniguain, Johnny Trapp. So many of those balls are half made by the run of a Kai Kamara. And so, you can body him up. I don't doubt that Borchers in an aerial battle can beat Kai Kamara for the ball. I also don't doubt that Kai Kamara can beat – to me, there's not a player in this league.
No.
If there are 10 balls hidden on a corner kick, one-on-one is going to beat Kai Kamara to more than Kai Kamara is going to beat them. I just think he's that good to me.
Agreed.
He can out-jump. He can out-position. He can out-attack a ball in the air better than anybody. Full credit to Borchers, but I'm putting him in with the rest of the league. I think Kamara's the best at that.
All right, so to me, those are the three things that I'm going to be looking for. Is there anything else that I didn't bring up that I probably should be looking at when watching the match on Sunday?
You know, your tweet was great. Hey, I need somebody who knows, a quote unquote soccer expert, to tell me how good Will Trapp is playing.
I never know. I hear about is how good Will Trapp is, and then I watch him. I'm like, is he doing? Am I watching something here? Is this a master class that I'm not getting?
Right. It makes you feel kind of like, boy, it's like when those people swirl around their wine glass and they tell you how
funky
it is.
Yes. and by the way, this is not a slight to Will Trapp at all. This is nuance on a much deeper level than I think the general fan is looking at. So I hope that you're setting me up to explain a little bit of what I should be looking for from Will Trapp on Sunday.
I think, let me just say this about Will. I really like Will Trapp's game. You know, there was a lot of time where Trapp and Perry Kitchen were kind of being brought up in that same vein of up-and-coming, holding midfielders in MLS.
But they're not the same guy, Sebi.
No. But in the same conversation
as
the next group of Kyle Beckham, who's going to be the next in that spot. They're totally different. I would give Trapp the edge, in a lot of areas. I love Perry being here in D.C. We see him a ton. I think there's a lot of Perry's game that's maybe unappreciated. And I think it's the same for Trapp. It's a position that naturally doesn't lend itself to too many wow moments.
Yeah.
He's not high enough, although he does get high every once in a while, he's not high enough off the field to hit the through ball. Also, he's playing with a guy who does that. So some of the passes that I think Will Trapp can make, because I've seen him make them, are left for an Higuain, maybe to a lesser extent to Johnny. He covers a ton of ground. He sits in great angles. I mean, this doesn't mean anything. It's not exciting.
When the crew gets going,
I think the ball, anybody can appreciate this. When the crew get going and they start pinging it around, the flow, the rhythm of that is impressive. And he's one of the guys that gets it and moves it to the right spot, the perfect weight of the pass, in two touches, not three, in one touch, not two. There's an efficiency to his game that is very, I think people say, like, oh, they see that and they like that and they're reminded of what they see, you know, at a higher level in the EPL or the Spanish League. It's the extra efficiency of touch that he has that I really appreciate.
The thing for me is that makes it so difficult to appreciate and to evaluate what he's doing is the fact that he's not an Ozzie Alonso, he's not a Perry Kitchen, he's not a Diego Chara, where these guys they just look like they're working hard, and Will Trapp is doing, I guess, what they're doing. He's just gliding to where he needs to be, rather than just a tenacious guy using tenacity to dive in for tackles and getting fouls and then getting up and barking at people. He doesn't do any of that stuff, which makes it kind of like, well, so what is he doing then?
Well, yeah, but what we're focusing on is the dramatic, right?
Yes,
if you're
exactly.
In the right spot, there's no need for the dramatic
exactly.
Talent. I also think he's got a great setup around him, right? He's got basically another guy next to him where he's not asked. He is in some way asked to cover more space because of their setup. But he's got somebody else that can do his role right next to him. In Johnny. And I think they complement each other really, really well. To me, that's, you know, you talk about kind of the matchup, and those guys can have an incredible impact if they can limit what Portland can do on the break. But that's asking a ton of two people because of the way Portland spreads out when they break. When they break, the movement off the ball is such that it's, no matter how good the guys in there are, you just need more guys to cover all the angles when they come out. To me, it's one of the most effective counterattacks that we've seen in MLS in a really, really long time.
The obligatory, very, very small DC United segment right here. It frustrates me because you mentioned Chani and Will Trapp playing so well and playing well together. It makes me think, well, you know what? Halstead and Kitchen are the exact same combination as Chani and Will Trapp, yet they got in each other's way left and right, which, you know, going back to Columbus and keeping it on Columbus, I guess, is the compliment to the chemistry that Chani and Trapp have, that they're able to work it out when they're kind of in the same place, and you could see them getting each other's way because you saw it with DC United when those two guys played with each other.
It's a good comparison. I think, you know, if we're saying Chani is Halstead, I give the edge to Chani there.
No, I'm saying Chani is Kitchen and Halstead is Trapp.
Okay.
Is that wrong?
I was going better and younger, but here's the deal. Trapp to me is far more. I can't judge Halstead on it here. You know, he was not. He admitted to, he told me in an interview that we did for CSN that, you know, it was a bad season for him, and that was before it was over. He started hurt. He never found his rhythm. I think both Chani and Trapp would have an argument to say that they, you know, are as good passers as either of those two guys, if not better. I think you have two better, you know, let's not forget, so people sleep on Tony Chani, you know, on his resume, on what he was in this league, not was, on, you know, kind of, the expectations of him when he entered MLS. So you've got two really, really high-end players there that have been given a role, a very clear role, and have been given time to perfect the chemistry. And that's maybe the thing that when you look at DC United and the specific Halstead Kitchen pairing, those two guys never had that this season. They were kind of thrown into the fire together when it was mission critical, eked out a few results, but really never found the chemistry to maybe get it to a place where you could compete within New York, which is what we saw in the playoffs.
You know, you mentioned Chani's story. He is a great example of when a guy has talent, you gotta give him as many chances as you can afford to give him. Because if this were another situation, maybe another league, a more high pressure league, I guess, another sport where the intensity level is a lot hotter, I don't know if he gets as many chances as he's gotten. And it's really, really great to see him finally get in comfortable, which kind of happened last year, but has evolved even more this year, and turn into the player that we all thought he was going to be 4 or 5 years ago.
You know what's interesting, too, is if you look at his stats career-wise, he never sucked.
No, he never, you know, exactly.
Always got into teams and made the first 11 and started on teams that were loaded with players. He maybe never found a rhythm like he did in Columbus, but it's interesting to look at the teams that let him kind of move on. And I wonder what they think now. And the truth is, Kai Kamara is a guy like that.
True.
There's a million guys like that in MLS. Don't find it quickly. It's a weird league. I think not everybody finds success in it right away, but you cannot write guys off at that high end. You can write guys off at the lower end pretty easily. If you can't hang in MLS, it's obvious. But if you've got a guy who can hit the high end at all, you gotta keep rolling the dice on him. Just on the hope that you'll get it consistently. He'll turn into the guy 25 games a year that he could be 5 games a year.
So let's wrap it up. I'm not asking you for a score, but who do you like to win the game?
Well, let me just say this. I'm gonna pick Portland. I just think the matchup plays it in their hands. I think they're really playing smart well right now. But the truth to me is, all of this comes down to the two coaches. And I really like you. You're not going to have two teams that are better prepared for one game than two we're going to get. I mean, Caleb Porter is obsessive about tactics, obsessive. And this matchup is perfect for him to sink his teeth into and really, like, get his team ready. On the other side, Berhalter's like a video guy. You know, they watch video, they break it down, they're high into the analytics. I think we're going to see a really well-informed 22 players on the field who know exactly what they're supposed to do and exactly how the game should play out. And like any soccer game, it comes down to some moments. I think Portland right now is maybe finishing a little bit better and finishing off those counterattacks a little bit better. Right at this second, I give the edge to Portland. But it is, to me, like, literally, it's a coin flip. I just have, hold on, Rush, you're going to love this. I just had the odds up here from Vegas.
Yeah.
Portland is a half-goal dog at minus 137. So what do you think of that? I pick the Timbers with the half goal.
So let me ask you this. We know in football, for gambling purposes, three points is basically what you get for being the home team. What's the usual home team advantage as far as the spread's concerned for soccer?
So right now I'm looking at it, and I think basically it's a half goal to the favorite. And so, like, right now Portland is minus 137. I'll give you an idea of what that means. Like, in football, that's probably a 3-point. It's a 3.5-point spread.
Okay, the only way I know sports gambling is through football, because it's the one that I've had the most experience with. So 3.5 points means, all right,
for entertainment purposes only.
Of course. So 3.5 points means, all right, we're giving Columbus 3 points because they're at home. The half a point means we think that they're actually the favorite. If this were on a neutral field, we would like Columbus more. So what you're saying is, taking 3 points.
I'm basically saying the Crew is a 1/6 of a goal favorite.
Yes.
You know what I mean? It's like 1/7 of a goal favorite. They're the favorite, but by a very, very small edge.
Now let me ask, and let me say this, and then give it back to you for more gambling talk. To me, Portland doesn't care about being on the road, and they're comfortable on the road, which to going back into the game means the home field advantage of Columbus partially neutralized by the fact that Portland's been very comfortable on the road, especially the last few months and in the playoffs. So if we're taking the home field advantage out of this gambling exercise, to me, Portland's a favorite. Or I'm taking that bet, and I'm taking Portland because I think Portland should be favored in the game since we're taking out home field advantage.
Yeah, and I mean, essentially what this is a pick-em. But yeah, I would make if they were playing in Home Depot or something.
Yeah.
If they're playing in Staples Center, wherever they're playing, it's a 50-50 game. But Portland to me has the edge. If we're going off run of form away from home.
Yeah.
I mean, home form for Columbus is pretty strong. Can't forget that. So I think if we're going on off of everything, cumulative, just body of work, Portland gets the edge, but not by much. Not by much, man. Not in this game. It's too dead even. It's too difficult to predict.
Dude, that the gambling stuff for MLS. That's good. I like that.
You like that?
I knew
I would dig that up for you. And I think maybe what we're finding out here is that Vegas doesn't know as much about MLS as they should.
I don't know if that's true. Honestly, I really don't know if that's true. Number one,
you think they know?
Well, I'm saying if they're not going to get into the business of taking bets if they don't have
right.
an idea of what's going on.
Absolutely right.
So, yeah, I'm going to disagree with that. And then the other thing, which I liked, is, you know, you could listen to a lot of podcasts breaking down the game. I'm not sure you're going to get a lot of MLS podcasts talking about lines, and I love that.
I'm breaking down the odds. Something to think about for 2016.
It's keep it in the back of your mind. Sebi, thank you so much, man. I appreciate it. And where are you watching the match at?
I've yet to be determined. I have a couple. One buddy invited me over, but it's kind of far away. Now I'm saying that on air, so he knows what I want.
but
I'll tell him not to listen. But no, I don't know yet. But I the one Sunday I have off all year for work purposes, so it worked out perfectly, and I'm super pumped for it.
All right, if you do something in Bethesda, make sure you let a brother know so maybe he can come out and hang too.
Okay, all right. You free Sunday?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Let's watch it. I would love to watch all it right. with a guy who knows what he's talking about.
Done deal. We'll set it up.
Sebi, thanks, man. I appreciate it.
All right, later, buddy.
Pass.
This is your voice. This is my red, white, and blue. This is my anthem to you.
For more show information, go to pitchpass.com.